Hey, hey! Welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. I'm your host, Cedric Jungelman. In this episode, I chat with Amanda Goodall, aka The Job Chick, a workforce intelligence analyst who advises funds and executive teams on the real signals inside America's largest companies. We dig into why margins are up while headcount isn't, the surge in offshoring and vendorization, and how AI is quietly reshaping everything from finance back office roles to warehouses. If you want a clear and practical way to navigate the current labor market, this conversation is for you. If you want to get in touch with me, it's Cedric at thebitcoinmatrix.com. And if you want to help support the show and me directly, I've added links for Venmo, PayPal, Bitcoin with Strike, and a P.O. box so you can send a check or money order. This show is user-supported, so I really appreciate anything that you contribute. Also, if you could leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to the Bitcoin Matrix. Finally, please share your favorite Bitcoin Matrix podcast episodes with your friends and family. This really helps us get the word out. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Amanda Goodall, aka The Job Chick.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Amanda Goodall is a workforce intelligence analyst, an independent consultant who decodes what's really happening inside America's top companies before the headlines hit. She tracks structural layoffs, offshoring trends, and internal role reshuffling across sectors like tech, aviation, oil, and finance. Her signal-driven breakdowns have accurately projected restructurings at Microsoft, AMD, Chevron, PayPal, Rivian, ConocoPhillips, Tesla, and more, often months ahead of public reporting. Amanda advises executive teams, funds, and public sector leaders on workforce risk, labor arbitrage, and organizational signals that never make it into earnings calls. She publishes under The Job Chick, delivering sharp, high-trust insight for leaders navigating the unspoken realities of corporate restructuring, where top investors and executives turn for labor market signals. Amanda Goodall, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
Thanks so much. I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day here too. So yeah, I'm excited to get into it. You know, I used to be a corporate accounting consultant and worked primarily at Fortune 500 companies and PE-backed companies, some startups here and there and some different sectors. But I'm familiar with sort of corporate America, but there's a lot of questions I have about what's happening now and from looking at it from maybe my point of view. So maybe what kind of workforce trends or patterns do you see in the economy, or what do you see at a high level?
Oh, goodness. Everybody wants to know about what's going on because it's a bit crazy right now. And, you know, I look at everything from a workforce standpoint, whether it's the stock market, whether it's about jobs, whether it's about, you know, what's going on in the economy, even because, you know, with what we see with corporations, their earnings, the results, what's going on, this is a geopolitical scale of things. And it all comes down to, can you get the job and who's hiring who and who's firing who and things like that. So, you know, overall 30,000 foot view of everything, we are seeing corporations focus on scaling margins and not so much scaling their teams, especially here in the United States. You know, it's been interesting to really look at like the last like 6 years. So just going just before COVID hit and looking at the numbers of employees, especially when you're looking here in the US, how corporations had their headcount, how they had it after COVID, which it peaked big time. And I know a lot of people think that all the layoffs currently that are going on are all due to the overhiring. That was done a long time ago. So when you look at that and you start looking at it more 2024, 2025, what we're seeing is that, yes, the headcount's there, but the level of offshoring is massive. So we're seeing corporations change completely in what their focus is on. I mean, I get it. It's about making money. They're, you know, CEO's job is to the shareholders to make money. Totally understand that. but the workforce is starting to suffer a little bit, and I'm wondering how long it's going to last.
What are the trends in offshoring that you see? What kind of jobs are getting offshored now, and what may be, you know, the kind of job that gets offshored tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, right now we have a lot of tech, obviously, a lot of admin, customer support. We've seen call center. I think that really kind of kicked it off over the years. We're starting to see a lot more healthcare admin go overseas as well. And, you know, people are frustrated. And it's funny because we do see companies like Klarna, for instance. And, you know, it's interesting, they just IPO'd. And we're looking at them, and I think they're a really interesting case study on what they're doing, because they were one of the really first ones, honestly, to focus on AI and kind of offshore some of the stuff, but also focus on AI. So that change on what we're seeing between humans, where we offshore and everything, it's an interesting sector. So And we're also seeing with TCS, Tata Consulting, out of India, we're also seeing everything that was offshored, they're starting to lose their jobs due to AI as well. So there's a lot of changing going on, and it's fascinating to watch. It's frustrating to watch, I will say that as well. But, you know, we see all these different pockets of offshoring and how they're changing with automation and things like that. So there's a lot coming.
Tata Consulting, is that the name you said?
Mm-hmm.
So what are they like? Tell me about them. I saw them all over the place at one of my clients.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of the biggest outsourcers. You know, they work with companies. They're one of the vendors for companies. So, you know, anybody can hire them and then use their teams to work. So, it's just a level of outsourcing that is going on. They're very heavy in tech.
There just seemed to be a level of ineptitude, though, where they went up against maybe like an Accenture. Mm-hmm. For an ERP implementation, or, you know, they're going to cover a whole department if you lay them off. And it seemed like they won a lot on bidding. And I just wonder how indicative is that throughout. I mean, it seemed like, you know, they won on bidding, but even there would be a lot of bloat within the projects. And I'm not just speaking to Tata, like a lot of these organizations, but it seemed like management internally of these Fortune 500s can't really grasp something where they fire 100 people and then replace them with 75, and you still have 50 too many. But now you have 75 with no legacy knowledge or understanding. You know, one of my clients, they would literally fire every consultant, you know, around the world via memo at 6 a.m. on a Thursday morning. And that's like 7,500 people. And then whatever breaks, then hire those people back. And these organizations are so huge. How do they roll out these programs that sometimes take like 3 years to affect the change? Or you're saying like these decisions were made so long ago?
They are, yeah, yeah. It's interesting because, you know, you mentioned Accenture. You know, they're the biggest, and you know they have it must be about 780,000 people worldwide. And so they're one of the big, outsource companies that corporations use. And, you know, they work as a vendor, basically. And so they do it. It's kind of beautiful for corporations overall, because they can bring in this other mindset, this other company to go deal with it. And so, you know, the Accentures, the Tatas, any of the management consulting and vendor type companies are the ones handling all of the hiring. And the interesting thing is that so many people that I talk to, you know, they mentioned that, you know, people like within Tata or anything out of India, for instance, they're like, yeah, we can get 1,000 employees like that. Whereas in the US, it's obviously you have all these regulatory things and the processes you have to go to. So that's why so many companies are utilizing this right now, because it's cheaper, it's easier. There's not healthcare like that the same way that we have it here in the United States. So, you know, for corporations, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's just really bad optics, especially where we are today, where people are really struggling to find jobs.
Okay, so people are really struggling to find jobs. So what is it like to go through sort of the job search process right now? Do you use LinkedIn? What sites do you go to? How do you find the real opportunities?
The job search right now is tough. I don't need to be the one to break the news to everybody. You guys know. But, you know, overall, Most people, I would say, are still on LinkedIn, Indeed, things like that, searching for jobs. You know, the easy apply buttons are right there. And, you know, what the feedback that I'm hearing is that people are applying to like 500-600 jobs and they're not hearing back for anything. And they know they're qualified. So, you know, and you hear recruiters go, oh no, I had 500 applications in and 4 were actually qualified. And there's this whole discrepancy of what's going on. You know, you have AI writing job descriptions that are being put on so that you can apply to. Then you have, you know, applicants that are using AI to write resumes for that. And then all of a sudden somebody's not qualified. How does that work? So it's a bit of a mess. And I can't imagine actually being in a job search right now. This is a tough time. But, you know, overall, Indeed and LinkedIn, I know a lot of people are starting to utilize their network, and that's a very smart thing to do. It's about who you know. You know, it's not even just necessarily reaching out on LinkedIn to go, hey, here's my resume, can you pass it along? It's starting to work the process. And, you know, my advice overall to anybody that is looking, you know, you have to be the obvious choice. You know, look at what a company is doing today. Look at what a company is doing in the next couple of years and figure out what their pain points are and compare that to your experience and your background. You know you can do the job, but you kind of have to tell them exactly what you've done and translate that into what they're focusing on. And that's the harder part of all of it, you know, just kind of, you know, doing that translation on a resume or even to recruiters, because not all recruiters understand all of the roles that they are hiring for. So you kind of have to really spell it out for them. You will have a lot of success with that. But, you know, the job search is increasing. The time length it is actually taking to find it. I mean, right now we're at, what, 24 weeks? And at 27 weeks, you're not even counted in the unemployment numbers, which is just insane. And, you know, it's, you know, I fear it's only going to keep creeping up a little bit, you know, just little percentage points every couple months. But it's massive. And there's so many people that are well over a year of searching. I just don't get it. It has to start making sense at some point, right?
Are these jobs real? A lot of the postings all real? Are there ghost postings or synthetic jobs?
Synthetic jobs, definitely. That's one of my favorite things to talk about. But, you know, companies admit to using them. Like, point blank, admit to using them. And the really interesting thing is that, you know, everything that I can track with, like, you know, hiring and stuff, with regards to the jobs, when you start looking at like SEC filings, when earnings come out for different companies, depending on which way it's going, you'll see a bunch of jobs listed just before earnings. And sometimes it will be just after, you know, so it's do they need to make sure that the shareholders see that there's stuff going on, or they need to go, no, we're going to focus on this. This is so exciting. And then bam, it's a bunch of listings. So you can really watch if you start monitoring certain companies, especially if you're going to apply to some, you know, look in your industry, look at them and you can see around the earnings calls when that all works. But yeah, there's absolutely ghost postings. And I think, you know, a lot of HR, a lot of recruiters will deny that until they're blue in the face. But the very fact that companies admit that in surveys with Harvard and things like that, you know, and you can see it. You can absolutely see it all going on. And it's just next level frustrating. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, I don't believe it's just because they're trying to, you know, get our information. Some people are worried about they're just trying to scrape data together. And I don't think that's it. It's a optics thing for shareholders overall.
How much do you see like machine learning or AI replacing more like desk jobs, like accounts payable or accounts receivable, things that are sort of very routinized? How much progress do you see there, or what development do you see?
Yeah, it's definitely happening. You know, there's a lot of areas, especially within finance, you know, like you mentioned with accounts and stuff like that are absolutely getting automated. There's still somebody that has to handle it, but you don't need a whole department of that anymore, right? You know, I think the one issue we're going to see is what we're seeing with like AI and like LLMs and stuff like that, it's not always completely accurate. Now, in the finance world, yes, they got their numbers down. It's good. But for the smaller businesses that are trying to automate so much, I'm already hearing some feedback, even locally here, and I'm in Las Vegas, where, you know, companies have started using it, and they went, I took this to my accountant and all the numbers were wrong. So, you know, LLMs learn. You have to train them. So it's going to be interesting to watch how the corporations kind of excel in utilizing these automations and in really kind of winding down the job functions within finance and accounting and anything like that. And the smaller and the medium-sized businesses are still going to have to cling to the employees, which also is going to bring down, you know, if you were working at a corporation or an enterprise level before, but you're now needing a job within something within that realm, your pay is probably going to be lower. So you're going to be looking at a lower salary because small and medium businesses don't pay the same as enterprise, right? So, you know, there's a lot happening with that. We're just going to see more and more of it.
What is morale like throughout sort of?
Not great. Not great. I'm very humbled. You know, when there's layoffs, people seem to contact me as their, you know, they call their person, their spouse, their family member, their parents, whatever. And I usually seem to get a call within 30 minutes to an hour. And so I'm hearing this raw emotion of what's going on, the actual stories, you know, the outright frustration, especially if they're top performers. And, you know, and I also hear people that have been searching for months and months, and they're just like, what gives? I am so qualified. And, you know, back in the day when I was still dealing with, you know, people on their career path and things like that before I really got into like the workforce intelligence side, you know, I'd see it. And I'm just, you know, when people are applying and they're following even my advice on it all and they're getting nowhere because the system is so broken, the morale just can't be there. Whether you're an employee dealing with a company that might do random layoffs at any point, or if you're, you know, dealing with a current layoff, or if you are even looking, like the emotion with all of this is playing a big part. And I think it's a big part in how people are approaching the job search. You know, they put in so much work just to apply for one job and they don't hear back. You know, they're ghosted, you know, it's not a real job, or they're ghosted from the recruiter, or they go on multiple interviews even. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're actually not hiring for this job. What? You know, it wears people down. You can't keep that going. And that's, I don't know, there's this part of me in like the back of my head just going, what's the end game here? What are companies doing? Do the CEOs know this is happening? Is this an HR thing? Is this just a symptom of how we've started to let AI really drive the hiring process, you know, and how they pick people and things like that? There's so many factors that could be at play here. And then at the same time, you know, I'm sitting there going, maybe it's just margins at the end of the day, you know, and I don't know. Again, I don't see this changing anytime soon. And, you know, for anybody that is job searching right now, you just got to keep going. And when you do have a job, always be looking for a new one. We have to change our mentality with regards to how we work now. We're not just this one person that does this loyal time period at a company anymore. That's long gone. And I think even the concept that you might be there for 3 to 5 years is kind of long gone. I mean, right now it's what, 3.4 years, I think, is the average time at a job. Not necessarily due to layoffs, but that's just the average. I think that's going to decrease as well. So, you know, to me, and something I've told a lot of people, we need to start, you know, to help deal with this mentality of it all and how to deal with how hard it is and how emotionally difficult this is. Think about this as, you know, contract jobs almost. You know, you get one, you're in it. As soon as you start working in it and you're kind of good within that first month, start looking for a new one. You know, the company's not going to be loyal to you. And as bad as it is, you don't have to be loyal to the company either. You know, you find a new job that's better for you, go jump into it. As soon as you get into it, get another one. There are these things. You don't want to be out of a job for 6 to 12 months, not in today's market. But if you are actively looking, you can jump when you're ready. And it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it seems like it's a Game of Thrones for employees. You know, you survive the layoffs, then you survive the acquisition. Then you survive the firing of the boss who hired you, and interviewed you and championed you, you know, and then, what are raises and bonuses like out there for employees right now? Are they strong? Is it, I mean, like,
no, Strong, I wouldn't use that word. They're lucky to have them. We are hearing a lot of reports from, you know, some of the major companies that have been laying off over the summer, Microsoft, Amazon, things like that, Intel, where some of the salespeople were let go. And, you know, I don't have fully confirmation other than I've heard from dozens of people that were in sales where their commission was not received because of it. They were laid off before the time period, the cutoff and things like that. So that sucks. You know, there's no other way to say that. And, you know, but as far as like bonuses, we're not seeing anything major anymore. I know right after COVID, gosh, you could even go to like work at Burger King and they were trying to pay you like a $200 bonus just to start. And we did see that a lot with tech and different things just to get people back to work. Not anymore. That's not happening. Relocation packages are becoming, you know, few between overall as well, which is also contributing to the issues because, you know, when you see big layoffs happen in certain areas like the Bay Area or Seattle, people have to move. Those are very expensive areas. You know, if they're not immediately finding another job, they may not have that cushion to stay there. But if companies aren't paying the relocation, I mean, I don't know if you've ever moved. I've moved a ton of times and it is not cheap. So we are seeing people struggle with that concept, which is, again, why we're seeing things falter. Payments are getting behind, rent's getting behind, mortgages are getting behind because people are stuck overall. And so there's big knock-on effects that I don't think a lot of people think about until it hits you. And then it's just like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And, you know, that's some of the biggest things. But, you know, that's, you know, between the knock-on effects of housing and stuff like that. But we also have to remember, like, you know, how it affects the spouse or anybody else that lives in the house that's also working. You know, are they going to be able to relocate to get a job if, you know, the other person is? There's so many things. And I see, you know, especially in like the Bay Area, there's a lot of couples that met at work. So they both work for the same tech company and they were both in the same layoff. So it can hit instantly. And it's tragic. It's tragic to hear the stories. And I hate hearing them, especially when they're just like, oh, I got laid off. Oh, and my wife just got laid off. And I hear that a lot. And I don't know how people are doing it.
What about the financial wellness of employees who are still employed? I mean, what's going on with like things like payday loans and that thing and that stuff?
You know, there's interesting things with that. I actually advise a credit company as well, just by chance, that happened years ago. So I still do it. So I get to see consumer credit health. So I'm not just relying on Fed data that's coming out. I'm seeing actual credit reports of what's going on. And it's scary, you know. There's a lot of concepts with the buy now, pay later. Everybody's just like, oh, no, we can just keep doing that. And, oh, I just pay it in 4 monthly payments. A lot of people think it's monthly. It's actually every 2 weeks. And you read the little fine print. A lot of people don't realize that. And then they get behind on that. And then it goes to collections. You know, so we have these issues. Now, we also have, like, the payday loans. Yes, that's still thriving. But we also have programs with companies like Chime. Now, they offer different programs to companies for free to the companies, and they can give it to their employees. Obviously, they make money on the back end. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart, you know, but, you know, they offer different things where you can focus on saving money or getting money earlier. So maybe you get paid on a Friday, but you really need to pay a bill on Wednesday. Well, you can pull part of that money. And I can't remember what that program's called exactly, but I actually spoke to one of the execs a few months ago about that. And he said, that's just becoming a really popular thing, you know, where people are doing that. You know, so it is that concept of they're tracking, you know, some monitoring and tracking kind of your spending to try to help you manage your funds better, manage your salary better. And, you know, for a lot of people, that is going to help greatly, you know, just, you know, that cash flow concept, especially if one person in the household loses a job, it's so bad. So, you know, some of these programs should be helpful for a lot of people. I really hope we stop seeing so much debt, so much buy now, pay later usage, because it is starting to really wreck credit. And credit is also checked for so many jobs. It used to just be financial and some professional services. It's now a lot of jobs. And, you know, a lot of companies are doing it. I think it's still under like 20%, but it's like 20%. That's actually a big amount of companies that are looking at that just to kind of see. And there's so many programs that are being built in to have this financial wellness. You know, companies are starting to see, you know, if employees have money and they're feeling okay, they're going to be more productive, right? I mean, that stands to reason. So, you know, they are welcoming these programs like Chime and things like that. So overall, I hope it goes the right way, as opposed to people just spending because the money's there, or keep taking it earlier and a little bit earlier and a little bit earlier, because it still comes out of your paycheck at the end of the day, you know? So how far behind can you get before you lose almost a whole paycheck because you're just paying off that the early cut, you know? I don't know. I have a love-hate relationship with it right now, but I hope it helps some people. I think it will.
How much do you think companies are looking at that and saying, hey, if we have employees who are struggling a bit, let's help them so that they can stay here, and maybe even from the point of view of now they need us and they're not going and they'll accept anything from us, versus let's get these people out of here. They don't know what they're doing with their money.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of both of that at play right now. Definitely, you know, they know. Companies know how to keep an employee. You know, they have perks and benefits for a reason, right? The very fact that we have, you know, say hello to your pet at home video cams, you know, they understand what people want. You know, what's going to make them happy? What's going to make them not take off so much, you know, PTO time to go do this or whatnot? So they are offering different things. And companies are well aware of the financial struggles. I mean, inflation and things like that. You know, whether we want to say it's there or not, people are, you know, struggling to manage finances. Is it like 63% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, or they aren't even making it paycheck to paycheck? That's a lot. That's most of America when you think about it, when you're talking from a salaried job point. And, you know, that is a real issue that companies are facing right now. It is talked about a lot in the HR circles. I don't really focus on that, but they do reach out to me, so I get to hear some of it as well. And, you know, it's something that I would highly recommend if you know that might be an issue, or if, you know, you are looking for a new job, or even if you have a job, ask your company about those perks, because they might just be offering them to new employees. They might not have rolled it out company-wide yet, but, you know, it's stuff to talk about with HR for sure.
What are the perks du jour? What are the perks that are the trend right now that are resonating or that they're trying to push?
Yeah, you know, I think they're giving small, tiny, tiny relocation, like, you know, $1,000. Okay. That's kind of one of the big things I see for some companies. And then, you know, overall, I think a lot of it is just like that health and wellness concept, you know, not just insurance, but like gym membership and the ability to go join like a paddle club or something like that. And, you know, like I said, the pet thing, it's all of that emotional wellness, the health wellness and things like that. Anything that you can do, anything that's going to cost more money on those aspects, childcare is something you can easily negotiate as well, especially maybe one family member already has insurance for the whole family. They're gainfully employed. You can say, hey, I don't need that, but we do need to cover childcare. You know, some companies will be able to negotiate and some companies won't, but it never hurts to ask, because childcare is expensive, like crazy expensive.
What about you mentioned pets. There's stay-at-home pet cams, so you can go to the office and still see your pet?
Yeah. I've seen those at, like, different, you know, conferences I've been at, and I'm like, is this a real thing? And there'd be, like, several booths, and I'm just like, wow, okay. You know, I love pets too. I get it. But, you know, some people are very attached and some offices just don't let you bring them in. So it works.
Or stay home.
People love it. And yeah, they don't let you stay home with your pets. So, you know, yeah, if you can have that, you know, check on them and the pet feels happy and you feel happy, you're more likely to be productive. So, yeah.
What's the trend now, or where do you see work from home? Is that still, is everyone working from home still, or? Where are we with that?
No, you know, there's always going to be companies that are happy to do the remote thing, because that's just part of their ethos. That's just their mission. You know, no, we're going to make this simple. We're going to do this. For the most part, you know, return to office has happened. And, you know, for a big portion of people, including those in finance and tech and things like that, we are seeing it as a mandate. And, you know, whether it's 3, 4, 5 days a week, it doesn't matter. People are still having to change their whole lives. You know, when they've gotten used to maybe staying at home. Maybe, you know, one of them are taking care of the kids, and now all of a sudden they're mandated to go back to work. So now they have to figure out the childcare. Hence why you're going to ask for childcare, right? Benefits. But you know, doing remote work is, honestly, it's done. It's getting done. It's always going to exist, and there's always going to be companies. And if you are completely like focused on only doing remote, then you do need to just look at the companies that's their thing. That's what they do. Don't try to go work at a big corporation that doesn't offer it. Don't try to do one that has already done RTO mandates, because it's going to happen again. Even if they have a remote job for you, it's going to happen again. And a lot of companies do use that. They don't admit they use this, but we can see it. We can see it in the numbers. They do use it as part of a general attrition concept. Well, I can't make it back to work. I live too far away. I can't do this. My whole life has changed. I'm sorry, but it's not a layoff number. It's, oh yeah, we offered them. We said come back to work, but things are changing, and you have to be ruthless with your own job and how you decide to work, and how you work is very different for everybody. And I think, you know, the pandemic really showed a lot of people, oh, working from home is cool. It's kind of funny because you look back at it and so many people hated it. They're like, oh, I can't stand staying with my family all day, and I can't stand staying in a room all day. And now they're just like, I have to go back to work. You know, so you kind of look at that and just go, there was a switch at some point. I don't know what it was, but you know, overall, things are kind of going back to how they were in office and things like that. And it makes sense for companies. I understand that. So, you know, employees just have to do what is going to work best for them, regardless of what it looks like, regardless of what company. Just go find those jobs that work best for you.
Sure. What about sort of commercial real estate, though? Are companies, do they have a smaller footprint? Did commercial real estate get repriced down at all? Did they renegotiate leases maybe? And what do you see happening there?
I'm not an expert in CRE, but CRE is having a moment. we are seeing a lot of, offices selling for way lower than should be pricing. You know, you can take it, you know, JP Morgan, for example, out of Manhattan. They had people that worked in their New York offices. They also had people in London offices. And they basically said, hey, we're moving you guys, and you can choose to go live in Dallas or Salt Lake, and we'll help you with a relocation, but that's where we're moving our offices. Now, they still have their offices. I think they still have most of them in Manhattan, and they're not gone from New York, obviously, but this was just like certain divisions. And, you know, a lot of people were like, I my whole life is here, you know, whether it was in New York or London. So it was a very hard move. So, you know, yes, we're at the stage now where it's cheaper for companies to actually have offices in cheaper locales like Salt Lake or Nashville or Dallas or things like that. And they can just kind of shut up shop a little bit. Yes, they still, you know, have their lease, have their whatever on their properties and their towers in New York City, but it's still cheaper. You turn the lights off, you don't have the insurance, you don't have all of those fees. It's cheaper to run it somewhere else. And I think we're going to keep seeing that, especially as CRE struggles for a while. And regardless of whether interest rates come down or not, that's not going to change anything that goes on with the CRE levels at all. And, you know, this also ties into how companies are utilizing more vendors and things like that, because they have all these offices, they've laid off people, or it's just gone through a natural attrition. So their offices shrink a little bit, but they can utilize them for other things, or they can sublease them. So there's a lot going on in a lot of areas.
Sure. What do you see, though, in terms of maybe like the floor plans? Are companies doing cubicles? Are they doing like offices for the managers? Is it everyone in a conference room?
I really don't know the answer to that one. From what I have heard, and this kind of happened at the beginning of last year when RTO really kind of became a, oh my gosh, they're making us go back to the office kind of concept. But even today, we're still seeing companies go, well, you need to come back to the office, but we have to like stagger you because we don't have enough seats. You know, there's not enough desks there. And I actually just saw this the other day. This was Deloitte US out of India, other Indian offices. And, you know, they were like, you have to come back to the office 2 days a week, but, you know, we now have to like schedule when you do it. So if you're not flexible or anything like that. So it still happens. The layout of it, I'm not really sure, but they didn't sound like they have the desk space anymore. So I don't know that why. I don't know why they would mandate it without having planned that out. I don't know who was in charge of that and just messed up. But we're seeing that a lot in a lot of different companies and every different industry as well. So it's not just like tech adjacent or something like that. It's everywhere.
What do you see maybe with like robots or, you know, here with sort of Amazon and warehouse jobs or things like that?
Yeah, that's pretty wild to look at because it was 2023 going into 2024, they had 750,000 robots managing their warehouse. And you've probably seen the videos of all those little like Roomba looking, you know, megabots that are going around doing all the work that a warehouser used to do. Now they have 1 million. And, you know, basically from everything that I can see, one of those bots can handle the job for 4 people. That's a lot of jobs that just went out. And I get it. Not everybody likes to work in a warehouse. I couldn't imagine. I'm sure there's some people that love it too. But, you know, there's big changes with all of that. Now, I've been to, I was actually a guest at the Accenture display back at CES earlier this year. And so I got to see some of the NVIDIA you know, humanoids that they're working on with Accenture and things like that. And that was fascinating. Everything that I learned at that point, they're not ready. It's not a thing yet for, you know, yes, they're starting to fold towels and move baskets and move boxes and sort parcels and things like that. So it is coming. But on a large scale, you're only going to see it at the large companies in the next 5-10 years. And they were, the person I was speaking to at Accenture was very much like, no, it's going to take 15 plus years for this to roll out as a more normal thing. So we still have some time with those kind of things. You know, it'll become more rapid, I'm sure. You know, that's just what it is at today. But every day, you know, everything that we're doing with automation is getting faster and better. So, you know, we can cut that time down for sure. But yeah, it's, bots are interesting to watch that change. And, you know, and I don't think people have really gotten the full aspect of that. You know, seeing Jensen Huang at CES introduce the different bots on the stage and things like that, that was really fascinating because there's so many applications, you know, from defense to domestic. You know, there's so many things that can be done with these. And it will be a matter of time, you know, that we get an Optimus or a something in our house that helps us as well. So, you know, We're not there yet. Unitree is a big one as well. And I think they're going to be one of the big names that are going to make it more of a normal thing at jobs, even working with humans, not just the, you know, like an Amazon, it's just the bots on the floor and there's really no humans. I think the Unitree overall we're going to see that as a collaboration almost, which will be interesting to see, to get used to. I don't think people are ready for the bots. Yeah, I saw, you know, watching them walk towards people and go out to shake their hand, people move back. So as a society, we're not all ready for that. But I think that side will come a little bit faster.
Yeah, I just wonder if we're not ready yet and it's going slower than everyone thinks. But does it take longer than everyone thinks? Or just when it comes, like it almost like sneaks up on us and in a shorter period of time than we think, it's already here?
I think it'll be a shorter period of time than most people think, you know. Just looking at it now, just look at the advances that have happened. It's amazing to watch how it's been going. And I know people think AI just happened a few years ago when, you know, ChatGPT came out. And it's been here for a long time. They've been working on this stuff for a long time, you know. And it's going to all of a sudden show up in your office, you know, in one form or another, depending on what industry you're in. And I think it'll be good. I'm not overly scared about it. I'm not overly worried about it. It'll be interesting to see which companies replace and which companies do that collaboration with the employees, because I do think there will be a stark trend on that.
Hmm. What do you think of the recent unemployment numbers that just seem to be like revised? I mean, we're talking about like 900,000 jobs.
Here's the thing. Nobody cares what the unemployment rate is if they can't get a callback for a job they are highly qualified for. End of. That's it. That's the story, you know. So we've got the unemployment rate is what, 4.3 now, and you know, I don't quite buy that one. And then you do see the revisions that have come out. We had, you know, last March it was 598,000. This year now we're at 911,000. Weird number, I will say. My brain just went, wait, what? economic emergency, call now. You know, people are done being lied to with the BLS numbers. You know, we can't trust them. This is hard. I know revisions have always happened, but they've never been this chaotic. Let's put it that way. I mean, this recent revision of the over 900,000 is the largest correction in history. You know, at a time when people are struggling to find jobs, and the narrative up until this point has, and kind of still is, has been, oh no, we have a strong jobs market. Really? So there's a lot of people that feel validated seeing this number, but I don't really think that's the right way to necessarily look at it, because that's great. Those numbers were last year up until March, okay? We've already moved past that. And if you are looking for a job, we want to know what's going on now. What's being done now to change and to help us, you know, find our future careers? And, you know, we're not hearing that from any company, any, you know, the administration, or just anything at all. So I think there's a lot of people that are just really lost on that. The numbers are numbers. It's irrelevant if you're looking for a job. And, you know, yes, does it show us like different recessionary, you know, trends and things like that? Yes, of course. But we can also feel what's going on, boots on the ground as well. And that is what's been happening. You know, I really noticed that big change, you know, like I said, you know, just end of summer 23 going into fall. And then all of last year, it's just been bad. And we don't need the revisions to tell us we're struggling to find jobs. You know, that we don't need that. So I don't know if it helps or it's harmful, but either way, whatever comes out next, I'm not sure how many people are going to believe it, because we've just been knocked around so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Speaking of like knocked around so much and people are not going to believe it, like how drastically did COVID change things from your perspective, or, you know, over the course of your career in retrospect, like,
you know, I would say for the most part, it made companies realize we can automate faster and we can cut money faster. And so we can save and build that CapEx and build those margins and look amazing. And, you know, I get it. I get what companies need to do. I've run several companies myself. So I understand that, you know, you do always try to automate. You do always try to save money where you can. But this, I believe it really accelerated things. It also, for the workforce, it also changed how we view employers and how we view our daily work. You know, this 9-to-5 grind is killer, you know. And I get it's been around for forever, but it was created 100 plus years ago. It doesn't really fit today's narrative either. So, you know, I would like to see companies being more transparent about it. I would like to see more of the AI applications that companies keep bragging about. Instead of them replacing people, have that work in tandem with them so that we can do our work faster than that 9-to-5. And as long as we get it done, that's great. But instead, they seem to just keep piling on. They're like, oh, well, now that you can do a whole day's work in 2 hours, we'll give you a week's worth so you can do it today. You know, this is what's happening and people are getting burnt out. You know, I'm seeing that, especially after like any of the big layoffs that happen. They're like, I've inherited a whole team. I've inherited, you know, 5 people's jobs. And they're like, and they're expecting me to do it. And it's tough. You know, you mentioned the whole like morale thing. They're struggling with that. You know, it's kind of a concept of not fair. And for some reason, companies are just like, no, but this is our bottom line. This is what we need to do. Well, you just fired everybody that could be doing it for one person. It's I don't know. It's a bit madness when you look at it sometimes.
Yeah, you're in that maddening situation where, you know, a whole department gets laid off. You get the parallel promotion of taking on that whole department. You get less resources. You have to learn everything they did. And then you know you're probably going to have to hand it off to someone and find yourself like a different role at the company. And so it's challenge after challenge with diminishing returns, it seems like. Really like Game of Thrones. So what about in terms of student loan payments? Like, I mean, are they people paying them back yet in terms of employees, and how's that going to affect sort of?
Yeah, it was a tough conversation when that happened, you know, when it was like, hey, you gotta do this, you gotta get on a payment plan because, you know, deferment is out. And so many people, I don't really know how you would miss that many emails or letters in the mail, but it's happened. You know, I don't know what the full process was, but I do believe they had years. This was in court for years. I mean, this was, I think it was finished in like maybe September, October in 23, and it got delayed until 24. So, you know, and then it kept getting delayed. So we're at the stage now where you have so many people that, obviously, everybody does go to college for jobs, and not everybody can put themselves through without taking out loans. So we are at the stage where we have a lot of people. I mean, it was millions. I can't even remember the full numbers right now. But, you know, they were going to be put into collection unless they reached out. And again, being on the credit side and seeing that financial consumer side, they weren't reaching out. They were reaching out to the company that I advised going, why did my score drop 180 points? So, you know, they weren't aware of it. There's still people that are not aware of it. And it's now showing up on your account as late. That'll drop your score. You know, pretty much the higher you were score-wise, the harder it would have hit you because you were kind of squeaky clean. So now you had a big hit. That's not good. You know, if your score was a little bit lower, you're probably maybe like 45 to 70 points. We typically saw anything below like a 620. But, you know, now we're at the collection stage. Well, they're not just like letting it run to collections. And if you ignore the letter, it's going to go away. You know, there's wage garnishment that's being talked about, and that's going to hit, you know. So if you talk about like people that maybe bought a house during COVID where things were cheap and everything like that. Well, now they have this, they have their mortgage bill, but now they're going to have a wage garnishment or even up to like a couple $100 extra. What are they paying? You know, are they going to let their rent or their mortgage go or their car go, or are they going to pay their student loan? Like what one's going to falter first? And over the next several months, I think we're going to see some really big hurt with all of that. It was a case of reaching out and coming up with a payment plan. I've heard of some people that are like, I told them I can afford $10 a month because I'm unemployed right now. And they gave that to me for 2 years. They gave you breathing room. Unfortunately, a lot of people didn't. And unfortunately, we are still seeing, you know, even those that didn't hit that straight off cutoff day back in April, we are still seeing people, you know, haven't paid over the last couple months. So now they're now at 120 days and it's hitting their credit as well. So it wasn't just this one and done thing that's like just destroyed credit scores for so many, for millions. It's just going to keep coming because people don't have that extra money right now. And unfortunately, because the way everything changed with the big, beautiful bill and things like that, you don't have so much leeway with the way you can defer and things like that. So there's a world of hurt coming for that. And I feel so bad for anybody that took out loans. And, you know, I do understand, you know, the ones that are like, oh no, make them pay that back. I understand the ones that are like, no, but we said, we were told it was going to get paid for us. I understand both sides of it, but as it's hitting everybody's credit right now, it's really hard. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that even if you don't have the, you know, student loans hitting your credit, even if you don't even have student loans, it will still affect, as a whole, certain regions, certain, generations even, because the way, you know, different companies work with like insurance or things like that, they check your credit. So you're going to fall into the, oh, you know, they're probably still paying student loans category. They're not going to look for everything necessarily, but you can still be lumped into the, oh, it's this category of person. Okay, you know, this score is, you're going to pay more. So it's not great. It will affect a lot of people. You know, as we see people default on mortgages or struggle with rent, it will affect society. It will affect everybody, not just those that are struggling with it.
What do you then see with tariffs? I mean, that's a fairly new thing. what sort of corporate America or the, you know, the Microsofts and the Amazons and the Accentures, what are they kind of, how are they responding or what are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, for the most part, I mean, it's gonna do what it's gonna do. When you're looking at it from a retail standpoint, you know, a lot of companies are saying they're passing it on to the consumer. And okay, we're seeing that already, you know, in pricing, at different stores and things like that. You know, it's not necessarily huge, but if you're on a budget, it's massive, you know. And you know, with regards to corporations and things like that, I don't think it's gonna make that big of a difference overall. It's kind of just one of those liabilities they have to deal with. So, you know, they have it to the side. You know, you kind of have to look at it as just like, oh, yeah, okay, now we're paying that. Okay, so we're making just a tad bit less. So how do we squeeze this out? Oh, maybe we do layoffs or maybe we outsource more. And they cover it. And then they're still up. And I think we're going to see more of that going on. But, you know, it's going to, because it's a global scale, because this is not just, you know, yes, the U.S. has taken tariffs, but this is hitting everywhere. This is hitting every country, you know, overall with what's going on. You know, I don't know what ones are currently paying tariffs, what ones are not. You can't tell from a day-to-day standpoint anymore. I'm not even sure if this is at the legal stage right now. So whatever's happening with it all, you know, companies are still getting affected. So they have to, you know, companies in Europe still have to go, wow, this is going on. Is this going to hit us hard? How do we deal with this? Are they going to do layoffs preemptively to make sure they don't, you know, go under for the next couple quarters? Maybe, you know, so it's a tragic thing to see happen. I understand why it's being done, but there's so much uncertainty with it. There's so much, well, I guess it's not really so much, but like there's a instability in the whole global system right now. And, you know, it's affecting jobs greatly. And jobs are the everything. Jobs are the stock market. And jobs are, you know, how we survive as, you know, as a society. So we really have to look at, you know, what companies are doing to focus on the worker first, if that's possible. You know, it feels like it's becoming less and less a thing, but you know, that's what concerns me the most, is that that's not really being talked about.
Is there like a different class of workers? Like right now, I mean, the stock market's at an all-time high. Maybe that's primarily driven by the, you know, FANG and Mag 7. Are the employees there like living high on the hog compared to the rest of the workforce?
Yeah,
I know it's a broad stroke, but
yeah, it's interesting what I have seen. Anybody that is, and this isn't every industry, this isn't every person, but I would say like director upwards, you're doing okay. You know, when it is a case when, you know, you do decide to leave or you are laid off or just, you know, just riffed and you're not part of the mass layoffs, or even if you are part of the mass layoffs, when you start looking for the jobs again, the money is not there anymore. So it's not the same levels of salary. So we are seeing a change in that, which is why we're seeing this relocation issue, you know, and especially with the housing market as it is, it's chaos. It's really chaos. And, you know, it's hard to find the same job again. And, you know, those cushy salaries are no more. Those came greatly after COVID. They were there before. Don't get me wrong. People were making some good money before, but there was a lot recently, and they're part of some of the biggest layoffs right now. So, you know, I don't see salary increasing anytime soon. Companies are too focused on automation. They're too focused on how can we do it for cheaper, whether it's AI, whether it's just, you know, okay, we're going to condense a team. We're going to reorg. We're going to put these people over here. Oh, you're going to do this job now, you know, get rid of the other rest of the team. So a whole function disappears. And I do see that sometimes, you know, or, you know, are they just going to keep offshoring because it doesn't matter? You know, it's still cheaper for them. Even if they were paying like the full salary of what they would in the U.S., it's still cheaper because they don't have all of the hiring issues and the insurance and healthcare and all that kind of stuff that doesn't exist the same way in other companies. That regulatory is just not there. So I'm not really sure we're going to see those nice cushy salaries anytime soon, at least. I hope they come back, but I'm not holding my breath either.
What have layoffs been like, some of these large layoffs? How are they handled? How do you get the notification?
Yeah, that's been bad. Like, you know, it was a couple of years ago. You know, we saw a couple, you know, shock layoffs where, you know, the CEO came on a Zoom call and nobody expected it, and it was like the whole company, and he was just like, "Yeah, you're laid off. This is it. We're done. Bye." And we were all kind of shocked. Now that's the norm, you know, and it's not the CEO doing it. It's their managers or the directors, VPs, HR, depending on who's getting laid off. You know, we're hearing stories of some, you know, people that are showing up. They get this email or something on their calendar to say, "Hey, show up at 9:15, 11 a.m., whatever." And it's staggered. So the stories start coming out. So people start going, "Oh man, I just got that for 2 o'clock this afternoon." So we are seeing these things. So they get on the call, and I've heard everything from 3 minutes to 7 minutes. They're done. Their computer shut off. Their whole job is done. And there's no Q&A. There's no anything like that. And ironically, one of the banks out of Australia, ANZ, I think it was last week. It might have been the week before. It's been a long couple of days. I think it was last week. They accidentally, an email got sent out to some of the people that were getting laid off. These people did not know there was a layoff coming. And it was just an automatic trigger or something happened with their system. And they got the email. So the company had, it was only partial amount of people. I think it was only like a couple hundred that got the email. But the company had to go, "Oh, yes, okay, publicly, yes, we are doing layoffs. Yes, this happened. We're so sorry, blah, blah, blah." And then, you know, a few days later, they laid off, you know, 3,500 people. So, you know, there's things happening. It's crazy how it goes on these days. This is why I'm saying, you know, you have to look out for yourself, because this happens just all the time now. And it happens randomly. And they're cutting things like sales, which is kind of just weird and backwards for a lot of industries, right? You know, you think, "Oh no, that's like the main thing. That's what they got to focus on." But they are cutting back on that. It's just because they're pivoting. They're doing different things. You know, getting in different types of contracts instead. You know, for a lot of different companies. But yeah, the layoff situation is, it's really dehumanizing overall. And again, that's also not changing. There's no point. It feels like it's just becoming a little bit colder, and people are just expecting it. This is why people are struggling to work in the office these days. They're just waiting for that to happen. And you know, there's like it rando happened to Microsoft, and then it happened again the next month, and then there was a couple extra cuts. People didn't see this coming, and this, I mean, Microsoft's not a one-off with what happened. It's everybody. So, you know, it's not just the regular annual calls that happen, you know, to resize and refigure and restructure. This is major game-changing things. And you know, the optics that a lot of people brought up, especially after Microsoft, you know, heck, I even brought it up. You know, they were going after thousands and thousands of H-1Bs this year. That's how many they filed for. Yet they're laying off people. Yet the narrative has always been, we can't find qualified workers. Well, which is it? You know, and it's really frustrating. So those optics are really bad. And people are starting to get very angry overall, because it's out of frustration, because it's just like, no, I was doing my job well. I was a top performer and I was laid off. I mean, gosh, the AI director at Microsoft was laid off. You know, and it's just like, how does that work? And there's enough talk. Microsoft kind of talked about a little bit of it, but it sounds like some of the original layoffs were decided by not just performance levels, not like just like, you know, when you do performance reviews, but actually kind of a little bit more automated. It was brought down, and then like the managers checked off on it. But if it starts at that, is it understanding the concepts of what you do, or is it just seeing job duties and output? And right now it just feels like it's just about output and ROI, and that's what's getting cut. So yeah, it's a cold world with all of that.
Yeah. And my final couple of questions here. I mean, what are you hearing about maybe inflation and sort of that aspect of the consumer or the employee or even the employers? I mean.
Yeah. You know, it's there. We can all feel it. We can all see it. We went through the whole great egg price increase over the summer, right? You know, we were there. We lived it. We survived. Inflation hurts though, and you know, there's all the talk about, you know, the Fed cutting interest rates here, what, next week, isn't it? You know, but we it's not going to change the job scenario so much. I know a lot of people think, oh, well, that's great. They're going to cut interest rates and now companies are going to borrow money and then they're going to hire a bunch of people again. I don't think that's going to happen. Yes, some companies will increase, but what I would say they are going to increase in is offshoring and putting also money into AI development, because that is the focus of their CapEx and all the spending that they're doing with all of this. And, you know, so the more they can put into that, the more they can still keep their margins and just, you know, expand further faster. And so unfortunately, even if they could cut the rate down to zero, I don't think that's going to make a difference for the labor market in the slightest. So, you know, we are in for a tough time, you know, and if you have a job, keep it. I can't stress that enough.
What if you were starting over, starting out? You were 20 years old. You maybe coming out of college or decide to skip college or, you know, and you don't have a lot of capital, or maybe you're 30 years old and you're starting over. What kind of advice would you give?
Yeah, it's hard. Grads, I think what's the stat? It's like 58% of grads have not found a job their first year out of college. That's huge. And, you know, and this is where it kind of comes back to that optics issue. I know I use that word a lot, but it is a lot of optics issues, you know, because you have all of these, especially STEM grads, that are very uniquely talented and you know, yes, they're entry level because they just graduated, but the jobs that we're seeing are like, well, you must have 3 to 5 years. How does that work? It doesn't work, you know, but they only want to pay them entry level, you know, salaries. This is the scenario we're seeing. And I spoke to somebody in tech just recently, and, you know, they said entry level is gone. The new thing for tech is apprenticeships and internships, really. And so you kind of have to go in there, do that grunt work for a while. And yes, you'll probably make a little bit more, but that's kind of where that one is focused on, you know, and that was kind of more in the cybersecurity world overall, but it's still going to be broad enough tech, you know, and then you have the concepts, you know, moving forward with all of that, that we need to focus on, you know, what's happening. You know, we have the people on visas, the H-1B visas that are coming over here, and that is a problem. Like I said, I'm all for merit, but we have the students that went to the same colleges together with those that came over on like OPT visas to study that are now going for the H-1Bs to go work at these companies. Why are we having so many of our students not get chosen? Why are we getting overlooked? Why are American students getting overlooked? You know, there's a national crisis with all of this overall, because if graduates can't find the jobs that they've been training for, what do they do? So if you're young and you're just starting out, I you know, it's hard. You know, every industry is going to have a little bit of different advice to it, but you have to just like do as much networking as humanly possible, you know, take that odd job so that you can survive doing all of this, you know, go, you know, do the weird things that nobody wants to do, you know, and it might be one of those like internships that nobody really wants. Do it, get your foot in the door, show them that you can help them solve that pain point. And really, you know, that's what starting out in a career is these days. And it's just weird. Yeah, people want transparency. And I think if companies were a lot more transparent overall, it would be better. You know, companies know what they're doing. They know what their focus is today. They know what their focus is for the next several years, especially as AI is changing, as tech is changing and things like that. It would seem if they wanted to focus on American workers, that they could be like, focus on this. These are the degrees you need. They could work with colleges and build programs so that they could get these amazing workers. I'm not seeing that. Yes, there's some programs out there, don't get me wrong, but it's not that you're guaranteed a job after that. And it's not that everybody should be guaranteed a job, but in today's age, it kind of feels like you do need that as well. You know, how do you survive without that? You know, even the gig economy is struggling right now. People are trying to DoorDash and they can't even get a DoorDash gig because their area is so oversaturated. So that's affecting greatly that 20 to 30 year old range that really like to focus on doing that. They're like, oh, I can just do the gig work, do the hustle, blah, blah, blah. And they're struggling to even find to be able to go deliver somebody's McDonald's to them, you know, and that's a worrying sign. How many more areas, you know, it's mainly the bigger areas right now, the bigger cities. So if you're out in the sticks, you're probably okay. You're probably not going to be put on a wait list, but you probably won't have that throughput either to make enough money. So there's a lot of problems we're facing with that. And, you know, to hear some of the, you know, leadership and the administration to say, you know, gig work, trade work, whatever like that, that's not endless. That's not an infinite supply. And as people lose more jobs, as there's more offshoring, as things become harder, we have student loans and the collections and people, you know, would struggle to pay their housing and their cars and things like that, which we are seeing as well, you know, and just the general amount of debt, they're going to stop ordering DoorDash. So then what do those people do? You know, and, you know, it's a spiral. It's a spiral. It's like a domino spiral. It's just going to go around and around, and nothing is being addressed. And that to me is what nobody's talking about. And we do need to focus on that as American workers, as the leadership, whatever. We all need to be talking about how we're changing the job scope. I mean, is there like a big end game in sight that we don't know about and only companies know about? So they're making so much on earnings right now from the stock market because they're just kind of milking the last little bit before we go on UBI. Is that the scenario? Okay, that's great. Give us transparency on what's going on. You know, if the job market's not good, give us transparency, because then at least we know how to budget, how to manage, how to go, okay, these industries are struggling right now. And so this is where we need to focus. How do I think outside the box? People want transparency, and we just need corporations or the administration to start being more transparent. And as hard as it is, as hard of a pill it will be to swallow, we're already feeling it. We already know what's going on. We just want somebody to say it, which again, that brings it back to that validation that, yeah, there was almost 1 million jobs that were not there last year. We know. Here we are, you know, mid-2025, and we're going to have the same report next year.
That's incredible. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been incredible. That has been so dope. Please let people know, you know, where they can find you and your work, and any parting words.
Yeah, no, thank you. This has been great. I'm always up to talk about this because, like I said, this needs to be a conversation. But if you're looking for, you know, workforce intelligence trends, you know, what companies are about to lay off and what's going on for like the investment side to know, I usually can predict layoffs about 3 to 6 months ahead of time at minimum. Go to my Substack, which is insideredgereport.com, or you can go to the jobchick.com just to reach out to me and say, hey, consult with me, things like that. And you can find me on X. I'm the Job Chick. I'm the only girl on there with pink hair talking about this stuff. So you can't miss me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Amanda. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I was happy to be here.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Bitcoin Matrix. If you enjoyed the conversation, don't forget to like, subscribe, and drop a comment below with any questions or thoughts you may have. We'd love to hear from you. You can support the show by checking out our sponsors and affiliate links in the description. It helps keep bringing you great content while connecting you with awesome products that I believe in. Share this episode with your friends, family, or anyone curious about Bitcoin. And let's keep growing this community together. Stay curious, keep stacking, and I'll catch you in the next one.